This episode is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm that gets that cookie-cutter thinking doesn't cut it in today's tech industry. Grant Thornton listens first, tailoring solutions to evolve with your business, whatever comes next. More at gt.com.
This is your tech news briefing for Friday, March 31st. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. Laser weapons, a force of 16,000 guardians, and potential adversaries arming in space. It's not a science fiction film. It's what the U.S. military is preparing for. But the possibility of military conflict in space is not like it would be on Earth. So what technologies would they need, and why is the Space Force gearing up for this now? WSJ Aerospace and Defense Industry reporter Doug Cameron joins us later in the show to break that down. That's in a minute, but first, a heads up. Our special weekly series on AI, Artificially Minded, is coming up soon. We'll tackle some of the biggest questions around generative AI and how it's already affecting life, work, and business in surprising ways. You can catch Artificially Minded every Monday in April, starting April 3rd. And there's still time to send us questions for the series. Leave us a voicemail at 415-439-6482. Or you can email us a voice recording to tnb@wsj.com. We look forward to hearing from you. And now, the headlines. Meta will let users of Facebook and Instagram opt out of targeted ads, but only in Europe. Instead, Meta will allow users in the European Union to choose a version of its services that would only target them with ads based on broad categories. Tech reporter Sam Schechner explains the difference between both options.
I like have a pain in my back somewhere right now, and I like literally got an ad about like if you have a pain in that exact spot. And if I were to opt out of this, that data about what videos I stopped on wouldn't be in the kind of cauldron of things that they mix together to figure out how to serve me ads. They would be using much more generalized information like, ooh, Sam is in Paris, or Sam is in his 40s, or Sam is a man. And, you know, those ads are going to be a lot less specific than something that targets the pain I have in the upper right quadrant of my back.
Users who choose to opt out of the highly personalized ads will have to fill out a form that Meta will evaluate before implementing the change. The U.S. and South Korea are asking Montenegro to hand over captured crypto entrepreneur Do Kwon to face criminal charges. The Terra USD creator was arrested last week at an airport in Montenegro over allegations he had a fake passport. South Korea issued a warrant for his arrest in September on charges of violating the country's capital markets law. Hours after his arrest, the Manhattan U.S. Attorney's Office charged Kwon with multiple criminal counts of fraud. According to a former federal prosecutor, the case is expected to take several months, as extradition is a slow-moving process. A lawyer representing Kwon in the U.S. didn't respond to a request for comment. And the metaverse, the virtual world that was once the hottest thing in tech, is facing a harsher reality. Both Disney and Microsoft have closed projects tied to the digital realm this month. Tech reporter Megan Bobrowski spoke with our sister podcast What's News on Wednesday about why companies are pumping the brakes on the metaverse.
Certainly the hype around the metaverse has died down, but people who have sort of been working in the space for a while, you know, they say that this is something that is the future in 5 or 10 years, whereas right now companies are in cost-cutting mode. AI is sort of something that has taken a lot of these companies by storm, and it's something that they're all focusing on right now. And so it's sort of just fallen out of fashion in a way, and I think a lot of people just feel kind of meh about the metaverse right now.
Okay, coming up, you can't dig a trench in space. So, how is the U.S. Space Force preparing for possible military conflict outside Earth's bounds? We'll find out when we come back.
This podcast is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm you share something with, listening. They take the time to understand you and your business so you get the best solution, not more noise. Start a conversation at gt.com.
The Pentagon is gearing up for a future conflict that doesn't take place on land or sea, but in space. It comes as China and Russia deploy missiles and lasers that can take out satellites and disrupt military and civilian communications. Joining me to discuss how the U.S. military is preparing for potential threats is our aerospace and defense industry reporter, Doug Cameron. Hi, Doug. Thanks for joining us.
Good to talk with you, Zoe.
When we talk about armed conflict in space, I'm sure a lot of people are imagining, you know, Star Wars or Star Trek or any number of other sci-fi films. Is the Pentagon planning on having potential dogfights in spacecrafts?
There's two big differences between what you see in the movies and what's reality. First, any potential conflict in space is not going to involve people. There's not going to be crewed fighters running around in space. It just doesn't work like that. Secondly, you just can't sneak up on people. You're traveling so fast, the physics, orbital mechanics for the physics majors, you just can't do that. So no dogfights in terms of people chasing each other at close quarters. You have to kind of be sneaky. You have to plan. It takes a lot of fuel, a lot of time to get one satellite with no crew close to another satellite with no crew. So that's the big difference between reality and the movies.
And what is it particularly about space and the, you know, environment in space that means you can't use the same military tactics or technology that you might use on the ground?
So we go back to the physics again, just the simple speed. For the sake of your argument, your best fighter jet might go at twice the speed of sound. Now, with a satellite, just a regular orbit or near-Earth orbit, you're talking about something going at 17,000 miles an hour. So the time to act is much limited. And what that does in space, it gives the advantage. If you think of being on the ground in a trench, you can't dig trenches in space. So just from a tactics point of view, the attacker has the advantage because wherever they're going to come at you, they're going to come at you with great speed. So that is probably the big difference. Attackers have the advantage.
So tell us a little bit about the U.S. military's plan. What branch, for instance, is dealing with this?
Well, this is all down to the Space Force, which was established in 2019. It'd been talked about as a way to kind of focus attention on the developing threats in space. So it was carved out of the Air Force. The idea would being that it would provide services for all branches of the military, not just the Air Force, and would also just help focus attention on its core mission, which is both to deter and to provide continued access in space. So all through the Space Force. Now, because of the threat environment changing, they now feel that they need to train people in a different way. Although it's difficult to attack people and it's difficult to defend things in space, you still need to learn how to do it. So what they're going to do is to invest in simulators. Just think of it like an aircraft simulator in some way. It's much cheaper to train on that than to train on the limited amount of satellites that are up there already doing operations. So that's what they're going to do. They're going to have simulators. They're going to develop basically tactics and, you know, try and second guess through war games what adversaries might do and how you might try to defeat or avoid them. It's very much a learning process and it's very much at its infancy.
What kind of funding are they getting to do this?
Well, the Space Force has got a big old budget now. The request this year is something like $30 billion. Now, remember, that's out of $800 billion for the U.S. military as a whole. That's up far more percentage-wise than other services. Now, within that, the extra training budget they're talking about is $400 million. Still a lot of money, but compared to the hardware to launch the rockets and build the rockets, which is the bulk of the $30 billion, it's still relatively small potatoes, which just gives you an idea that they're at the start of a process and, you know, there's a long way to go. What you can expect is that budget's going to continue to increase as the years pass.
Can you describe the kinds of weapons they're developing to engage in a possible military conflict in space?
Two simple subsets, you know, things that go bang and things that don't go bang. In terms of things that go bang, you can talk about potentially lasers in space, which can blind or disable another spacecraft. There's work that's been going on where a satellite can have like an arm or a grappling hook, which in theory can go up to another satellite and pull it out of orbit. So these are what they would call kinetic capabilities. And you could add to that missiles which are actually shot from the ground to blow up a satellite. Russia did that in a test on one of its own satellites some years ago. The problem with that is it creates a whole lot of space debris, which is a challenge for everybody because everybody has to orbit in the same space. The non-kinetic ones is jamming and cyber warfare, where you're basically interfering with the signals between space and the ground.
Isn't there a treaty on not engaging in military conflict in space?
There are many treaties, most of which have not been signed. The main non-signatories tend to be those nations with the biggest assets in space, including the US. So while there is a kind of broad agreement at the highest level not to militarize space, everybody is. No one's actually signed on in a clear-cut way saying, we're not going to do this. It's in the vaguest terms. Because there is a land grab in space, sounds a strange thing to say. And because it's such a fast-moving technology, no one kind of wants to rule out anything because that might give them the advantage in things like resources on the moon or mining asteroids down the line. So everybody amongst the big spacefaring nations has basically kept their options open.
All right, that's WSJ Aerospace and Defense Industry reporter Doug Cameron. Thanks for joining us, Doug.
Hey, thank you, Zoe.
And that's it for Tech News Briefing this week. TNB's producer is Julie Chang. We had production assistance from Zoe Culkin. Our supervising producer is Melanie Roy. And our executive producer is Chris Sinsley. I'm your host, Zoe Thomas. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.
This episode is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm that gets that cookie cutter thinking doesn't cut it in today's tech industry. Grant Thornton listens first, tailoring solutions to evolve with your business, whatever comes next. More at gt.com.